Hello and welcome to the Psych Files. Michael Britt here, and this is episode 47, entitled The Little Albert Study, What You Think You Know Is Mostly Wrong. I did an episode some months back about the Kitty Genovese, the myth, and what you knew there was mostly wrong. As it turns out, much of what you think is true about Little Albert is also wrong, although some of it's right too, so don't feel too bad. At least I didn't feel too bad when I read a lot of resources on Little Albert, and I learned a lot of new things. So it was kind of an interesting exploration into one of the most famous studies in the history of psychology. So hopefully you remember Little Albert, the whole story there. He was 9 months old, and it was John Watson who conditioned him through the use of a steel bar and clanging noise behind his head to fear certain objects and animals. This was one of the precursors to the behavioristic movement in psychology. So we're going to look at that this week and see what you know and what you are wrong about. I'd found this article by Ben Harris, and it was called Whatever Happened to Little Albert, published back in 1979. And that article, as often articles will do, you look in the references section to jump off to another article, which was J.B. Watson's Little Albert, Cyril Burt's Twins, and the Need for a Critical Science by Franz Samuelson. Both of these appeared in American Psychologist. I started to look at a number of intro psych textbooks, looked at some of my favorite sources, The Story of Psychology by Morton Hunt, 40 Studies That Changed Psychology by Roger Hawk. I even went into Wikipedia to see what they had to say. And finally, I wound up on, of all places, YouTube, which still has those videos that John Watson took back in 1920. What was he interested in? Watson and his future wife, Rosalie Rayner, they were interested in, can an infant be conditioned to fear a neutral stimulus? So here's the idea. We're back in 1920. Everybody's talking about Freud. So along come these researchers taking Pavlov's ideas and saying, well, you know, Pavlov, that was dogs, that was salivating. How could any of that apply to more complex human behaviors, thoughts, feelings? Psychology has always struggled to call itself a science. I mean, can we really reduce what goes on up there in your gray matter to things that can be studied systematically and reliably? People have sort of fought over that. And I guess there are people today who still argue that psychology isn't a science. But anyway, so amidst all of this Freud talk, comes John Watson, and what he's trying to do is to help establish behaviorism, a science of psychology, based on studying human beings, but only studying the things that we can observe. So instead of talking about id and ego and superego and Oedipal complexes and all of these concepts, these ideas that, you know, exist, I don't know, somewhere in your head, let's just focus on what we can observe, just like other sciences do. And let's be systematic about observing those things. And if we can do that, maybe we can build a science of psychology that's respectable among all the other sciences. Okay, so that's what he's trying to do. And so Little Albert is sort of a pivotal study there. It plays an important role. It's just that it didn't go quite the way we think it went. I used to tell my students about the clanging bar, you know, hitting the bar behind his head. And I wasn't wrong there. That was true. It was about 4 feet long. I said that he was conditioned to a white rabbit. That's not correct. There was a rabbit in there. He wasn't white, though. And that wasn't the first thing. He was conditioned first to a white rat. It's often said that this fear of white rats generalized to all kinds of other white furry objects, like a Santa Claus mask. That's not quite true. He was afraid of a sealskin coat. The rabbit was brown hair. That we sort of ran away with that white furry idea. So that part's not quite true. There is the belief that all of this conditioning was very strong, that he had powerful fear. He had a phobia. And John Watson himself is in part guilty for all of these distortions. Because, you know, he's sort of hemmed and hawed, not so much in this first article, but in other articles that followed it. After I'm looking at all of the evidence, I think it's clear that there were some instances where the fear was strong. But in the end, he really, I think it would be a huge reach to say that Albert had a phobia. These fear reactions actually were not that strong, and they did not last that long. So no reason to feel that someone is walking around. I think the other thing that people say is that, oh, this poor little boy, he's walking around, or was. I suppose he'd be 88 somewhere by now. Maybe he's still alive, I don't know. But that he grew up fearing Santa Claus. It's the drama of the story, I guess, that makes it also so memorable. I wouldn't worry about it, okay? By the time these experiments, they weren't really an experiment, by the way. It's not really an experiment. Some people say, oh, it's a little Albert experiment. Not really so. You know, experiments have to have two levels of an independent variable, right? You have to have a control condition and an experimental condition. Here, this is really nothing more than a pilot study. And some would say, as some of the sources that I read would say, a poorly conducted pilot study. So we don't have a little boy who had a phobia, and it's true that they didn't uncondition him, but I don't think we needed to worry about it. They admit they didn't uncondition him, but to tell you the truth, you know, looking at the descriptions of little Albert's behavior, there just wasn't that much to uncondition. He just didn't fear these things that much. And it wouldn't have lasted. My opinion is these things would not have lasted, and they would have simply extinguished by themselves. So, what are the facts? His name was Albert B. Everybody's got that right. He was approximately 9 months old. He was conditioned to a white rat. They did try other things like wooden blocks, a dog, sealskin coat, package of white cotton. Other things they tried, a white glove, and the most infamous Santa Claus mask. Now, here's what's strange. One of the articles that I read here, I think this was the second one that I mentioned, the one by Franz Samuelson. Here's an interesting quote. Curiously, one finds that the mask, the Santa Claus mask, was introduced in the original account simply as the Santa Claus mask. A later article by Watson added that Albert had played with the mask on all previous occasions. So what he's saying is Watson had used the mask and paired the mask, the Santa Claus mask, with the steel bar. It is not that he conditioned Albert to white rats and then suddenly brought in a Santa Claus mask and, oh, he's afraid of Santa Claus. That's where the thing starts to fall apart. He did not generalize to all of these other things. He had been conditioned. In other words, the bar had been struck when he saw the Santa Claus mask, and this had been done repeatedly. Now, regarding, again, another point here as to whether or not Albert had a phobia, the 79 Harris article quotes Watson as reporting that when Albert was conditioned again to the rat 10 days after the initial trial, Albert, now listen to this, fell over to the side, got up on all fours, and started to crawl away. On this occasion, there was no crying, but strange to say, as he started away, he began to gurgle and coo, even while leaning over to the left to avoid the rat. So I don't think what we have here is a pronounced fear. Certainly not if there's gurgling and cooing going on. In addition, on this same day, he was again conditioned to fear the rabbit, and Albert's response was reported as slight. Okay, what else do we have here? Watson reports that in the same room as the rat, Albert allowed the rat to crawl towards him without withdrawing. And on the final day of testing, when Albert was exposed to the rabbit, to which he'd been conditioned to fear, he did not avoid the rabbit at all. Watson reports, after about a minute, he reached out tentatively and touched the rabbit's ear with his right hand. Interesting. Given this, it is surprising that the study gets as much attention as it does. And surprising for two other things that we overlook. One, there was only one subject, Albert. The study was never replicated by Watson or by any of his contemporaries. So no one's been able to repeat this, which is a problem. So what's ironic is that in the same textbook, which will have a whole chapter devoted to the scientific method and tell you that you need to have a good sample size and you have to have replication, in order to have confidence in your findings, we have devoted a good deal of time to the Little Albert study with none of these weaknesses mentioned. Okay, here's a couple other things that have been that were found in some textbooks. That Albert had a fear of cats, fear of fur muffs, a fear of white gloves, a fear of Albert's aunt, who wore fur, a fear of teddy bears, and a fear of fur coats. None of that is true. If I was to write a textbook, I mean, that's a hard thing to do. So we do rely on secondary sources, and some of those secondary sources are Watson himself, who kind of stretched the truth in, by altering and deleting important aspects of the study in other publications, some of his books and other articles. He was quite a writer. And even he said, and this is where some of the errors occur, he said that Albert's fears were likely to persist indefinitely, quote-unquote, unless an accidental method for removing them is hit upon. Okay, so he built up the story, basically. The other reason for its popularity is it's a great example of how the theory should work. So banging a steel bar, presenting the white rat, fear develops. That's a great story. If only it were true. One of the quotes taken from the Harris article, which seems to appear in various places, puts it pretty well. Harris ends his article by saying that it seems time, finally, to place the Watson and Rayner data in the category of interesting but uninterpretable results. See, Samuelson ends his article by saying that the extraordinary appeal of the Albert story must have come from the fact that it was, especially in streamlined presentation, a beautiful illustration of an idea already congenial to its audience. Right. Basically, that it is a catchy story. Now, I checked a couple of other sources, as I mentioned, just to see what they had to say. And one of those would be Wikipedia. There's always a big controversy about Wikipedia and how accurate it is. I found it to be rather accurate, certainly no worse than any of the textbooks. I looked at it on February 16th, and at that time I saw a little caveat that said, "This article may require cleanup to meet Wikipedia's quality standards." Not sure what that means. Maybe that's the article's in the queue to be cleaned up. But, the article in Wikipedia does say that the Little Albert experiment was an experiment, which itself, as I say, is not really true. That it was conducted in 1920 is correct. That Little Albert was 9 months old is correct. They introduced something you don't see in a lot of other articles, that burning newspapers were presented to Albert. And you do see this. If you go to the YouTube video, and I'll have a link to it from the site, you do see that Watson put burning newspapers in front of Little Albert. But the newspapers were not paired with the clanging behind the head. Albert is curious about fire, which is not unusual, right? Now this is interesting. And again, this is correct. Watson and his colleagues, at least in their original 1920 article, state that they had planned to attempt to desensitize Albert, perhaps by pairing the white rat with warm milk, okay, which, now that would have been a reasonable one. However, they did not do that, and as I say, I don't think that it was necessary. But what's interesting is the Wikipedia article repeats some things which are in Watson's original article, which are, frankly, a little bit embarrassing. It does say in Watson's article that had the opportunity existed, they might have tried a couple of methods to desensitize him. Here's the one that's a little bit embarrassing. Trying to recondition Albert by showing objects producing fear responses while simultaneously stimulating the erogenous zones. First the lips, then the nipples, and as a last resort, the sexual organs. Yeah, that's a detail you might want to leave out. That's a little bit, I don't know what to call that. That's, thank God he didn't get a chance to go any further with the deconditioning. This other method is probably the better one that they said they were going to try, which is to recondition Albert by feeding him candy or other food. Okay, and that's probably a good way. So candy, milk, cookies, etc. I suppose if you were going to go through with it, those would be the ways to go. Although, as I've said before, I didn't think it was necessary, since the emotional reactions simply weren't that strong. So there's no need to fear, then, that Albert suffered any permanent psychological damage. So, final point. We have a study that was poorly conducted and yet very, very well known. So why is that? Well, it reminded me of an article that came out in 84, I think, by J. Paul Peter and Jerry C. Olson. And it's called Is Science Marketing? It stuck with me because what they did was they took something of a tongue-in-cheek approach to suggest that we think of science and scientists as objective. And what these authors point out is that in order for a theory to become successful, the researchers have to market it. I mean, let's not call it anything other than what it is. Some theories become well-known because they're marketed well. Here are some of the things that make a theory successful. Right, and what a successful theory, in their words, is one that has been adopted by a substantial market segment, unquote. Quote here, scientists must develop and carry out a marketing strategy to promote their theories. Why are some theories successful when maybe they shouldn't be? Theories that are easy to understand tend to be more successful. So the Little Albert study is easy to grasp. For that reason, it probably owes some of its success. Give you another example, Maslow's hierarchy. Now, many, many people know about Maslow's hierarchy, but I find it to be not a very helpful theory, an extremely general theory, not one of psychology's major contributions, but it's easy to understand, makes sort of intuitive sense. Other things that make a theory popular, if you can research it pretty easily, and if you don't require any special equipment like polygraphs or anything that's expensive to buy, if you can study something using surveys or self-reports on everyday ordinary people, then lots of people will probably do research on it, and it will probably gain some popularity. Theories containing familiar everyday concepts, words, and meanings. Theories that are put forth by scientists who are well-known have a good chance of being successful. Maybe the final reason why the Albert story is so well-known is because of the strength of Watson's personality. And he was a persuasive guy. As many people know, he went into advertising. He left psychology entirely and went to work for a large advertising firm. He was a persuasive guy. He made a video. How many videos are there of psychological studies? This guy knew how to get his story across. All right, so there you go. So as I say, most of what you know about Little Albert is blown out of proportion. Let's put it that way. And you should definitely not be losing sleep over what happened to this little boy. Okay, a couple of announcements. There is a new chapter in the Mapper, M-A-P-P-R, a little audio study device I've been working on, and a new chapter on learning. So there's a concept map with about 30 nodes on it, all the important concepts from Pavlov, Skinner, Bandura, etc., that you would learn about in the learning chapter in psychology. All right, that's this week's episode on the Psych Files. Thanks so much for listening. Tell your friends about the Psych Files. Send me an email, drop by, and leave a comment on the website. All right, thanks a lot. Take care and see you next time.